Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
James, we have 2 hours to spend together. I'm happy Edmonton won, so I don't know about you, but regardless, it gave me an hour to look up all sorts of useless things to talk to you about, and that was fun, too. All right, same thing for tomorrow night, by the way. I don't know what time we'll get on, but it'll be after the Stanley Cup Finals. So Marvel unveils the Galactus Head Popcorn Bucket for the Fantastic Four. And big press releases, don't you know. Marvel Entertainment unveiled the Galactus Popcorn Vessel, a movie theater bucket themed after upcoming film, The Fantastic Four First Steps. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I want to eat my popcorn in a vessel. But then again, maybe it's good that Marvel's doing this, because you might as well realize that the ingredients in that popcorn probably do come from outer space. We'll get to that. The bucket was unveiled today in a video with clips from the new film spliced together with footage of the container. And it's modeled after the head of planet-eating villain Galactus, played by Ralph Ineson. The container is billed as the universe's biggest popcorn vessel, measuring 17.5 inches tall and 20 inches wide. Oh, that's not going to put on any pounds, will it? And apparently several other films have recently launched with themed popcorn buckets. Dune Part 2, Alien Romulus, Gladiator 2, and a Minecraft movie. All right, so with that in mind, I started to think, what is in this stuff? Because I don't think there's anybody who goes to the movies, and I don't normally, but I've been a few times, and never once did I think that that popcorn had anything to do with butter. And turns out I'm right. For the most part, it doesn't. So I have to find this out, right? So I look it up, and they say, popping kernels in a special oil. Yeah, the cheapest seed oil they can find. That's what comes to that. And then seasoning with a blend of ingredients like flavacol. All right, so right there, I think, what is flavacol? It's a buttery-flavored, yellow-colored popcorn seasoning salt. Its primary ingredients are salt, artificial butter flavor, FD&C yellow number 5 and number 6 for coloring. Yes, that's right, E102 and E110. And so that's what gives it that distinctive yellow color. And mimicking the look of buttery popcorn. Good. And apparently the base is a salt, and then the artificial butter flavor comes next. That's the key ingredient that gives it its buttery taste. And they don't fully explain how they get there. That's right, other than the word artificial. Right? I don't know about you, but I'll just take it dry. Thank you. Thank you very much. And so apparently, flavacol really is a closely guarded industry secret. And this is true, by the way, of most flavoring houses. And there aren't many in the world. Cincinnati's famous for some, but there are others. And it's fun to drive by them, because whatever they're testing, the entire, you know, roadway will smell of it. But what's interesting is that these houses, because obviously they're developing and then selling the flavorings to countless different manufacturers, are a state secret, basically, and the FDA and all lets them get away with it. And so we don't know what's in those natural flavors as far as that goes. And that's true with a lot of products. But flavacol and its dyes. So there you have it. But while I was reading that, I was thinking about actually something that happened to me this week, and that is, we were out eating, and I ordered some shrimp Alfredo. It was over Linguini restaurant. It was really good. Really good. Yeah, I didn't finish it, of course. I took some home because it was too big a portion. So, and I thought to myself, well, this is an exercise in futility, because you know what happens when you take Alfredo sauce and try to reheat it. Obviously, the butter and the cream separates, you know, and it's usually a mess and you have to try to constitute it. But I thought, well, I'll give it a go. And so next day, open it from the refrigerator, it still looks good, put it on a plate, all right, put it in a pan, heat it. Does not separate. Not one iota. Sticks together just like it was when I was eating it. And to this day, I am sitting here thinking, what the hell was it? Because it was not butter and cream, or it would have separated. What it was, I am clueless. And of course, you know, you ask the waitress, and she's clueless too. Oh, no, that's butter and cream. No, it isn't. And so I can only imagine what's in the marble bucket. All I know is that there's a lot of it. So 888-876-5593-8888-Raleigh. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine, providing it's useless information. And God, I've got a lot of that. Play golf? Well, those who do know about hazards. What good golf course doesn't have its share of hazards? Well, a Colorado golf course had one that no other golf course had before. It required an animal control officer. Apparently, the hazard, right there on the fairway, was a peacock. Yeah, just another day on the green. This was at, Todd Creek Golf Club. And a wandering peacock made its way onto the links, creating a hazard for golfers. And the bird itself, actually. Officers carried the peacock to relocate it. And that's the peacock story. We've got one, not to be outdone. We've got other animal stories. I often think that there are things you see on the road, and it's a good thing you're not drinking, though. If you tell anybody else, they'll swear you were. That's what happened with the escaped zebra outside of Nashville on I-24. Yeah, right in Rutherford County. Now, the interesting part is it is not illegal to own a zebra. You can have one for a pet. I understand they don't make good pets, but nonetheless, Tennessee doesn't care. You can have one. But all hell breaks loose when it escapes and flees onto the highway. And then later into the woods. Well, apparently it's back home at this point. But yeah, I'm sure there are some drivers who are having a hell of a time explaining why they were late. Now, 888-876-5593. We've got, another one of those message-in-a-bottle stories. And I actually like them. And they make me wonder. In this case, it was an 11-year-old kid, which is always good, from Michigan, vacationing with her family in Florida this week. And she finds a bottle that was interesting because it was one of those things that she's just walking along and the waves were coming up and receding and all that. And then at one point the wave came up, and when it receded, she sees this bottle. So she grabs it and she shows it to her mother. And the bottle contains a small note. Hello, people who found this. You will be happy you found this. Why? Because you will know me with this number. And there was a phone number on it. So the child's mother sent a text message to the phone number included in the note, and quickly got a response from a woman in Hawaii, 21 years old now, who said that she and her brother had thrown the bottle into the ocean off Oahu 8 years earlier. And the note writer did not want to be identified, but she said she was 13, her brother was 8, he had the idea, and they did it because they'd found a message in a bottle on their own. I don't think they ever got a response, but they said, well, let's do it. So now, super fun to see that her bottle ended all the way up to Florida. And definitely did not expect that to happen. Well, apparently meteorologists didn't either. Pretty unlikely that the bottle floated from Hawaii to the west coast of Florida. Possible, yeah, right through the Panama Canal. I don't know. Everybody's got theories on this. And, of course, no one will have any answers because Mother Nature isn't talking. But possible that it hitched a ride on something or what have you. But no one knows. Hawaii to Florida. Yeah, so that's some of the useless stuff I've got. What do you have? We also have some of your requests. There weren't many left, actually. I did a good job at playing them last week. But we've got a few, and also some that tie into this date in history. For instance, Chubby of Chubby and the Turnpikes. Yeah, Antoine Tavares had a birthday this week, so it's going to give me a great excuse to play I Know the Inside Story. You'll hear it next on WGN Radio.
Telling all your friends since your law's been gone. It's not your fault things worked out wrong. You're acting like an angel, you're a devil in disguise, but you can't fool me, I'm a little too wise.
1967 on Capitol. I know the inside story, Chubby and the Turnpikes. 720 WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and 67 was a great year for Capitol when it came to R&B, surprisingly. It was around that time, Patty Drew and Tell Him, which was, of course, a re-release of when the Drewvilles did it a few years earlier, but yeah, remember the Capitol promo guy was Sidney Miller, and man, I thought those two records were just terrific, and not that they were giant hits or anything, but they were just wonderful. And of course, Chubby and the Turnpikes became Tabaris, that was their last name, and of course, I love Tabaris, and so many wonderful things. But Chubby, who was not named Chubby on his birth certificate, Antoine, 81 turned Monday, and New Bedford, Mass, and Providence, Rhode Island. And a couple of the members of Tavares are no longer with us, but we have Butch, who turned 77 last month. We talked about that. And Tiny will turn 76 in October. So, yeah, sadly, rest in peace, Ralph and Pooch. But we got Chubby. And, yeah, I thought, I know the inside story was a fine song. So, 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And, you know, post games, you never know what you're going to get. And that's right. And I sure would like to get some callers. But if not, that's perfectly fine, because I'll prattle on. Though at this moment in time, I have absolutely no idea what about. Yeah, last night was great because Johnny Goen from Austin saved me. That's right. We talked about soul disc jockeys. And might do it again if he calls back. Or whatever is on your mind, because everybody's thinking about something. And I was talking to somebody today who was asking me, well, what is your show about? You know, when they find them, you know, they expect that it's going to be the usual political claptrap or all that. And I explained that, well, it's just a good time. We talk about nothing. And the reality is, I'll tell you what, it's harder to talk about nothing than it is the issues of the day, because of course those are the kind of things that you can play on somebody's emotions. But it's also the thing that you hear all day long, and it's tiring after a while, and you say, you know, I just need a break from all this. And so that's what we try to do. But when it comes to what we're talking about, man, I'll tell you what, it's very often a monologue for me. Hence eating disasters or popcorn buckets. But movie will probably be a big hit. We'll see. They usually are. And other than that, I am flat out, truth be known. But that's not to say that something won't cross my desk here in the next few minutes, because what I tend to do during the day is, anytime I see a story that looks like it might be interesting to talk about, I put it in a file. Now, at the moment, I can't find the file, but I will. And that'll give us a trove of items to discuss, interesting or not. And one of the things that I saw that was interesting is managers identifying three AI careers that are expected to boom. And I think to myself, wait a minute, because all you hear story after story is how AI is going to be putting people out of work. Well, in this case, it's one of those feel good saying, oh, no, no, you might become an AI powered energy grid analyst. That's one of the top AI careers, they say. And also autonomous logistics coordinator. Yeah, now there's a good time had by all. Desert smart agricultural engineer. I guess they won't be doing that on the East Coast. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, we've got David from Winthrop Harbor, who is usually good for a few requests, or at least comments about music. So welcome back to WGN Radio, David.
Hello, Raleigh?
Yes.
Hi. Hello.
Yes.
Greetings. Hey.
Yes. What's up?
I just want to... So during COVID, miserable time for me, really.
Everybody.
Really crazy.
Truly, everybody.
Well,
nobody had a good time.
Well, my sister, well, some people did.
Really? What?
Anyway.
How? No, wait a minute.
Well,
don't bury the lead.
My sister did, because
how?
She said she could go out and no one was out, and she kind of enjoyed it like the animals, I guess.
All right.
But
all
anyway,
right.
There was an internet site where it was just during COVID, and it was like just good news site.
Yeah.
And it was, you just read it, and it would just say something good about something other than what was dwelling and just reverberating on the news.
No, of course. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, what happened to the site? Do you know?
I got over COVID and I'm forward.
Yeah, I'm just moving forward. Left them in the dust. Yeah. Here they were entertaining you for a good year, and you don't look back. No, I understand.
I do look back in terms of the experience and how we, as humans, I don't think we ever, we have a problem with remembering the past.
With what?
And I'm remembering the past.
Oh, remembering the past? Well, you know, to an extent, the mind is wonderful that it allows us to forget the things that are bad. And the first time I really saw that, I was very young. A lot of the World War II soldiers who had come back, you know, maybe 5 years after the war, would get together and they'd be talking about what a great time they had on leave. And I mean, there were hilarious stories and all this. And I thought to myself, isn't that interesting? Because they saw the horrors of the war, but a few years later, what printed on their memory was the little girl in Paris, or whatever. And I thought, man, the mind is certainly protective.
Yeah, and then you know, through the war, they used to call shell shock.
Of course,
World War One. You know, now it's post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, and very serious topic. But yes, it's just dreadful what's going on with that.
But then. So you do, though, we do talk about crazy nothing like Bill Elliott trivia, but then we do talk about important stuff, too. So.
Now, speaking of important stuff, did you hear Buy For Me the Rain last night?
Hang on a minute.
Don't go away. Stay where you are.
I didn't request that.
Yeah, no, I know. But stay where you are. We'll talk about the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and you'll hear a little more Buy For Me the Rain. Don't go anywhere. Stay where you are, and we'll talk about it right after the news right here on WGN Radio.
I'd like to thank you, Mr. DJ, for spinning the record I asked you to play. When my sweetheart heard my plea, she decided to come back to me. We had a quarrel and said so long. We didn't know just who was wrong. So I sent
Otis Williams and the Charms. Yeah, on Deluxe, you betcha, 1956. He's still with us. He turned 89 Monday. Born in Cincinnati in 1936. All right, keep going, Otis. Now, we're talking with David in Winthrop Harbor. And last night I played for you the first thing that the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band released on 1967 on Liberty, Buy For Me the Rain. I'll let you hear a little of it, and then you can look it up if you want to hear it all. We'll get into the Mr. Bojangles here in a minute.
Darling, buy for me the rain. Buy for me the crystal pools that fall upon the plain. And I'll buy for you a rainbow and a million pots of gold. Buy it for me now, babe, for I am too old.
Yes, So they were kids in Long Beach who formed that band, and a year later, Liberty released Buy From Me the Rain. So that's how it started. But then you liked Mr. Bojangles, and I asked you if you ever heard the original, because everybody and their brother cut it, and Jerry Jeff Walker wrote it, and he did the original, recorded it in 67, and they released it in 68. So we'll let you hear a little of that, too. And since I'm not going to play the whole things again, but just in case you missed them.
I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you in worn-out shoes, with silver hair, a ragged shirt, and baggy pants, the old soft shoe. He jumped so high, jumped so high, then he'd lightly touch down.
So that was the original, and the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band were the 12th act to record it.
Beautiful. Thank you, Raleigh.
Oh, sure.
So that puts me in the mind of my childhood.
Oh, yeah?
So you asked me why I wanted that particular version. That's kind of where I grew up, you know, product of the 60s.
Well, and yeah, that came out, I think that was released in October of 1970, and interestingly, it was a month after John Denver released it, and thank God that wasn't a hit, and a month before Harry Belafonte released it.
Okay, well, like I always say, music is a matter of taste, not a matter of fact, right?
Oh, of course, of course.
So, here's another fun thing. Are you a fan of Marty Robbins?
Yeah, in fact, it's funny you say that, because James had requested not only El Paso, but the follow-up years later, Felina. So, we might play those.
Okay, so I'm right on board with all that. So, like I say, I span from the Carter family to Judas Priest to, you know, McCallie, wherever you... I'm not a huge fan of house music, rap, hip-hop. I grew up on kind of 80s music, AM radio, driving in my Buick LeSabre.
Okay.
You know, as a kid. So they were playing. However, when I was in high school in the 80s, they were playing 60s rock and roll on the loop, you know, and CKG, and that's what I kind of enjoyed that more than pop music at the time of in the 80s, like the Eurythmics and
You got to give the Eurythmics credit, because that sound, that sound in the early 80s was the, you know, not whether you like it or not, that sound was what gave new life to top 40 radio. It came back with a vengeance.
When I was in high school, I'm like, these bands are never going to make it, like Duran Duran, Judas Priest, that band is going to stand the test of time. They're going to be 40, 50, and sure as they are, you know, they are still rocking.
They are. But they are. They've got an official website. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So, anyway, I think I've said my piece.
Well, I'm delighted you called, and thank you for that. Appreciate it.
All right.
Okay,
peace out, Raleigh.
All right, good
Take
deal.
Care.
Yeah, Judas Priest released an album last year, actually, and haven't heard it, but they did, and that was about a year ago right now, actually. 888-876-5593, and that is going to take us to John in Covington. Hello, John, what's up?
Hey, I just, since you need some callers.
I do.
I always wanted to ask this, but I always felt like, what a stupid question.
There are no stupid questions.
Well, okay. When I would work at the supermarket, okay, and it leads into a story. The story is this. The Cincinnati Reds, they had the big payoff inning in the eighth inning, okay?
Oh, I know,
and,
yes.
Yeah, well, Ken Griffey Jr. was batting for me.
Okay.
And I had just a regular old radio in my locker. I plug it in. It won't work. It will not work. It's something to do with the roofing, because I took it outside. It worked just fine.
It's probably metal. But you mentioned the eighth innings of the Red. The second and the eighth innings, Joe Nuxall used to call. And it was hilarious because I would run those games. And when it was Marty Brenneman, I could recognize the outscore. But when it was Joe Nuxall, I'd miss it half the time because by the eighth inning, he was enjoying his beer a little much.
Yeah, well, I'm not so sure that was true by the time Griffey Jr. got there. I think he got off of that a little bit as he got older. But, I got Griffey Jr., $25 a single, a doubles 50, 75, 100, a grand slams 1,000. What's Griffey do for me? Flies out the center. But the other thing, we would take...
Let me explain something. What you were experiencing was there was a metal roof on that building, okay?
Okay.
And what that would do is it would create a Faraday cage. And so that, how do I describe what a Faraday cage is? It's an enclosure. It's made of conductive material and electromagnetic waves and all that. So a metal roof, due to its conductive properties, can essentially create one of these, and it's just a bitch for AM.
It will, tell me.
It can significantly, if not block entirely, but cause real problems for AM. And so,
well, I'll tell you the other thing. That's funny you say that, because I started at Kroger's when there was only a few things had barcodes, so we had to do it the old-fashioned way. One guy would—it was a line, a conveyor line, and so I would price. The other guy would stack. Anyway, we were able to finagle it in the back room with a coat hanger, attached to the antenna. And then we could listen to the race of the day on WNOP. That one would come in.
Depending on where you were, that's really true, especially.
Well, it's like, if I hold this guy's hand and he raises his leg and
because the other thing is, in a way, this can kind of reflect, what it's going to do. It's going to absorb the waves as far as that. But in addition to that, it can cause a reflection, and what that can actually do is create a directional antenna that blocks the signals in certain directions. So it's basically a shield, that's just stopping the signal. But anything you can do to improve that antenna or get it outside the building, well, the world becomes your oyster then.
Well, we just had it planned to where my mother, she was listening to the game, and I'll call you back before the game ends so you get your prize. Well, she called back, but I didn't get a prize. It in a nutshell. Thank you, Raleigh.
All right, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, WNOP was daytimer, but they were half jazz and half comedy for a while there in the 70s. And they were just terrific. You never knew what to expect. And the station was located in three oil drums that were welded together and floating in the Ohio River. And the guy who owned it was a Commodore in the Navy or something. And he had a restaurant. Everybody thought that the reason for the thing floating in the river was because of his naval leanings. And that nothing could be further from the truth. It's because he found a way to avoid property tax. But if you can imagine the Ohio River and three oil barrels that are welded together, you can imagine how many grams they had to track on those turntables when they were playing the jazz or the comedy. Yeah, but they were terrific. That's in the days when you had crazy owners and fun times. So, you'd curse them to hell and back, but man, what we wouldn't give for them now. 888-876-5593. Jim is in Richmond. So, all right, Jim, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yes, and I wanted to tell you that you jinxed yourself because last night you said, we'll be on at 10 unless they go into overtime.
Yeah, well, that's always my fondest dream. They go into overtime.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it was less than a minute left that they scored. Yeah. Otherwise, they went into a second overtime.
Yes, I know. I caught that. Believe me, I was ready for the second overtime. I had some filing to do.
Yeah. And your team won.
Yes, they did.
Yes.
Well, tomorrow night's a different day. We'll see what happens then.
Well, they're not playing tomorrow.
Oh, they're not?
Playing Friday night.
Oh, darn. Oh, well, I guess I'll really work 3 hours tomorrow night. Oh, well. Now, will Friday night be the second game in the series, or are they going to Tampa?
Yes, okay. It'll be game two.
And will it still...
Two games in Edmonton, two games in Florida,
Tampa,
and then one.
Oh, that'll be interesting travel, won't it? All right.
Yes.
Well, we will see.
And I wanted to tell you, I said on Monday night, I said you needed to hear about all this craziness with dealing with doctors, because tomorrow I'm having emergency laser surgery on my right eye that I really don't see out of because the pressure is super, super high.
What are they doing? Is it retinal surgery? What are they doing?
They had a name for it, and they said it today, but I didn't retain it.
Okay.
And I have a tube that they had installed, and that's starting to poke its way out, and he has to re-sew it in or something.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
But here's the craziness. The 21st is when he told me that he's going to have to do surgery on the eye.
Uh-huh.
So then I spent a week calling, did he make a decision? So then Friday afternoon, they called me up and said, oh, yeah, we're going to do it Thursday, which is tomorrow.
Wow.
And you need to hurry up telling me I have to hurry up and go through that pre-stuff where they take blood and they lit EKG and all that kind of stuff. And you need to call your primary doctor.
Right.
And my primary doctor retired in December. The woman taking over his job is on maternity leave.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, who's ever in the office? So I call them up on Friday, and, oh, we don't have any openings until Thursday. So then I called the scheduler back from my doctor's office and tell her that. And she goes, that's ridiculous. I'll call them up. So she calls them up, and then she calls me back later. And this is in the Whitewater Clinic. So then she calls me back. Oh, you have an appointment 9 a.m. Monday morning in Lake Geneva.
What?
You know, yeah, because there's a clinic, Mercy Clinic
in Lake
Geneva.
How do they think you're going to get there?
Right, and which is exactly what I told them. So with my brother dealing with his wife in the hospital.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. No, you're not going to Lake Geneva. Forget it.
Well, no, it worked out because my brother said that was fine because it was just, drive to my house, half hour to Lake Geneva and back to my house, and get it over with. So I went to them. So we need to fax over the stuff over to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I get there and the nurse says, we didn't get nothing from the North Shore. Person that's doing it. So then I called her up and said they didn't get nothing because I was waiting to see the doctor.
Right.
And the doctor came in and said, I got it all right here. I got your papers right here. So they didn't even tell the nurse that.
Uh-huh.
So that was the start, and it's been hell all week.
Oh, yeah.
So they got the paperwork,
mm-hmm.
and so then he asked me a million questions because he didn't know me.
Right, of course.
But they have this thing called MyChart.
Uh-huh, of course.
But this is, both of them were Mercy places, mm-hmm. so he had all my information going way back.
Right.
So then, the next 3 days, it has been HELL. The North Shore Clinic sends me a text that you have to click on this link and do pre-registration.
Mm-hmm.
So I send them a text back. I can't see to do anything on my phone.
Right.
And then they text back, you're not listening to us.
They're not listening to you.
Right. So then finally, this was all going on Monday. So then So then I finally called him up the next morning, and I said, I can't do what you're asking. You need, and it was a voicemail, you need to call me and answer the questions.
Right.
So, you know, whatever questions you need.
Right.
So they call today.
Okay.
You know, yeah. Today and tomorrow and both days. And then they're asking me all these questions. And then they go, well, when was the last time you had an echocardiogram?
Oh, jeez.
And I said, I don't know, a year and a half ago, a year ago. Well, we need that information because this was the lady, the anesthesiologist person.
Of course.
So then I gave her the phone number for my cardiologist.
Right.
And then she says, well, you need to get in touch with them too. So I, you know, called over there and I got voicemail here and the voicemail there. And I finally got through the nurse for the cardiologist called me and she goes, yeah, we got the fax number and we'll fax it over to them.
Okay.
And then that scheduler calls me up and said, we didn't get nothing from your cardiologist. You're going to have to call them again. And then I called back to the doctor's office and then she tells me they sent me the wrong fax number. It didn't work.
So
then I called them and now they sent me a new fax number.
Mm-hmm.
So then they called me again today while my friend who only came in for one day so I could get all the shopping done because she's taken the whole month off.
Right.
So I'm in Walmart, and they called me up and said, oh, we're going to have to cancel your appointment tomorrow because we didn't hear back from cardiologist. And then she goes, you need to call. And I just hung the phone up.
Good for you.
And then all of a sudden, half an hour later, she calls up and she goes, okay, everything's back on. We got all the paperwork. I got to the point where I just was ready just to say, screw it.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't blame you.
So then first they said, the appointment is you show up at 2, your surgery is at 3, and you'll get out of there at 5.
Hang on a minute.
Now,
don't go away. I'm going to leave you right there, and we'll pick it up in moments here. Don't go away on WGN Radio.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, I fell in love with a Mexican girl. Nighttime would find me in Rose's Cantina. Music would play and Felina would whirl.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Did you ever wonder what happened to Felina? All right, well, I guess a lot of people did too. For 7 years, we wondered, from 1959 until Marty Robbins released an album in 1966, which included the story of Felina.
Amid streaks of lightning and loud desert thunder, to a young Mexican couple, a baby was born. Just as the baby cried thunder and lightning died, moon gave its light to the world and the stars did the same. Mother and father both proud of the daughter that heaven had sent them. Felina was this baby's name.
Of course it was. It goes on for 8.5 minutes, but it was a James on the South Side who wanted to hear it, and he got to hear some of it anyway, and we'll pick it up with Jim in Richmond right after the news right here on WGN Radio.
Desert nights, poverty, grief, and strife, she went her way late one night in the moon's golden beam. She didn't know where she'd go, but she'd get there, and she would find happiness if she would follow her dream. After she ran away, she went to Santa Fe, and in the year that she stayed there, she learned about life. In just a little while, she learned that with a smile, she could have a pretty clothes, she could be any man's wife. Rich men romanced her, they dined and they danced her. She understood men and she treated them all just the same. A form that was fine and rare, dark, shining, glossy hair, lovely to look at. Felina was this woman's name.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. So this is about Felina, who, of course, comes from El Paso. And, you know, we, in the last segment, learned that she was born during a thunderstorm in a desert shack in New Mexico. And after a year in Santa Fe, you just heard about her. And, yeah, I can only imagine. I don't think marriage was in the cards, but you figure it out for yourself. And then she goes to El Paso. And in El Paso, she becomes a dancer. Oh, does she ever. Falls in love with the cowboy, the protagonist of El Paso, obviously. And, of course, the cowboy is beset by jealousy, and he shoots another man who was flirting with Felina. And he later returns to El Paso and is shot by a posse. Felina receives a dying kiss, and then she shoots herself. All right, so then that's the story of Felina, but it's a trilogy. So after Felina, which was never a single, by the way, LP cut in 1966, we have the finale of the trilogy with El Paso City, and I know you don't want to miss that.
From 30,000 feet above the desert floor, I see it there below. A city with a legend, the West Texas city of El Paso. Where long ago I heard a song about a Texas cowboy and a girl. And a little place called Roses where he to go and watch this beauty world.
That plane ride, by the way, was 10 years after Felina was described in the 1966 album The Drifter. So that came out in 76 as a single, and of course the original El Paso was in 1959. So that was James's request, and we'll get to them. Steve Bryant, we'll be talking to him about the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band and more. We got Robert and Stickney and Laura and Willowbrook and Cindy in Chicago, but we're talking to Jim from Richmond, going through the terrors of the damned as he tries to make an appointment for a surgery. And it's interesting to me, Jim, that all this stuff lands on you. All these people, what, did we lose you, Jim? Oh no, I couldn't have lost Jim. Jim, call me back. But all this stuff lands on him. Suddenly he has to run around for all this pre-surgery nonsense. But as we heard, it seems like he certainly managed to somehow get it together. And, you know, I don't blame the anesthesiologist one whit for this because, of course, you know, they're bringing you to the brink of death. They absolutely want to know when's the last time you maybe had an echo or something of that nature. So I get that. But it sure seems that it shouldn't be all on Jim to find it. And, something's wrong with that. But, oh, good. So he called back. So, okay. Now, Jim. So you managed to pull off the near impossible, but this shouldn't have been your problem.
Right. And it's more entailed than that. My brother, with his wife in the hospital, they tell him, oh, we're going to release your wife on Thursday. And he's screaming at them. He'll be running me around all
right,
day.
Right.
So then finally he was trying to convince them to let her go today.
Uh-huh.
And then I get a phone call while we're discussing this. And then I get a phone call again. He says, okay, you're scheduled for 2 o'clock tomorrow. But we may change that if somebody cancels.
What?
And right. And then I turned to her on the phone. I'm 100 miles away from your establishment. You think that could be changed in, you know, in a few minutes? No.
Right.
And then they called me back again. Okay, you're back scheduled, you know, for 2 o'clock to show up and 3 o'clock for the operation. And so then I had to call my brother back and say we're back on again. And then he goes, well, my wife's home, so
oh, good.
He took care of that.
Now, how is she doing?
And, we didn't get a chance to do that because I was still back and forth on the phone.
Plenty of time tomorrow during the drive.
Right. But now I have to get up at 5 tomorrow morning to eat breakfast because I can't have anything to eat after 6 o'clock.
Right.
For the 8 hours.
Oh, no, I know. Well, the less you eat, the better.
Right. And then now you, hopefully, if I survive all this, I will call you tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
To tell you what happened.
Yeah, we'll pray
and
everything
then,
holy. You're not even sure what they're doing.
No. They said the procedure, but I didn't retain it.
Yeah.
And then there's a story of my sister that is even worse. So
is she still in a facility?
No, she's at my brother's house.
Oh, your poor brother.
Right. Well, put it this way. He had his wife, who's best friends with my sister, and then my two other sisters that are less than 2 miles away, today threw their hands up and says, "We're done. We're not taking care of her. We're done," you know. And dumped it all on my brother.
Oh, man.
Because she can't get up and move.
Right.
She can't remember a thought from 1 minute to the other. So that's another story. I can tell you about it tomorrow.
Oh, man.
But,
well,
you know, and she refuses to get up and walk, so they have to change her diapers and stuff.
Oh, God.
So my brother goes, "I'm sending her back to the hospital because I... You know, if no one's going to help me."
No, he can't.
You know?
He can't do it. He actually,
right.
You know, caregivers have to take care of themselves before they can take care of the person they're caring for. He won't make it if he tries to do this alone.
Right.
He can't.
And he's self-employed, so he has to do these jobs in order to stay.
Right.
With, you know,
right. In order for a roof to be over his head. I got that.
Right.
So, no, he can't do that. That's just, I'm
right.
so sorry. What a mess. But yeah, he needs to protect himself.
So my brother that drives me around, he told me about it, and he's like all up in the arms. "What's with these sisters? They won't even take care of her. And he was yelling and screaming.
Well, there's a lot of that, unfortunately, and for a lot of different reasons. But there's only so much any one person can do. And as I say, you've got to protect yourself.
And thank you for listening to me because I had to get this off my chest.
Oh, man. Well, hopefully it's worth it. Hopefully tomorrow will be a great day, and I look forward to hearing all about it.
Yes, okay.
Okay, thanks.
Appreciate it. Everybody, bye.
Yeah, so absolutely. So keep Jim in your prayers. So not so much for the procedure as much as navigating the medical system. But it is interesting how that is. A doctor will say, just show up for this test on this day. And meanwhile, it's like 90 miles from your home and you got no way to get there. And it doesn't even occur to them that that might not be possible. All right. So 888-876-5593. Steve Bryan in Las Vegas. What's up, Steve?
Hello, Raleigh. How are you and John?
All right. How are you feeling?
Oh, okay. It's not working as well as I thought, but they said sometimes it takes 4 to 5 weeks.
Oh my God.
I know. The stem cells they shot in take a while to, I guess, build the collagen back in the hip joint. So
you're doing better than you were before the procedure, right?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I know. I'm just going with it because the next step is a new hip, and I don't want to think about it.
No. We don't want to do that.
Yeah, I know. I understand. Anyway, but I'm listening to the Marty Robbins songs. That, you know, the first two are in 3/4 time. They're waltzes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fourth one, the fourth one where he's 30,000 feet up, that's in 4/4 time. So it's kind of interesting. And after I heard those three songs, I kept humming to myself, you know, "Come a little bit closer."
Gotcha.
It's the same damn song.
God, that's great. I never thought about that, but there you are. Yeah, and
he wrote
all the El Paso trilogy, every bit of it.
I'll be darned. That's there was a big penchant back in those days for songs where cowboys died. There was a big iron on his hip.
Oh God!
I forget who that one was.
Yeah. So,
but anyway, well, I call up the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, a real favorite of mine. And they really sort of changed the game. They had those three compendium albums, Will the Circle Be Unbroken?
Yeah.
Volumes 1, 2, and 3. And they brought in all kinds of country and folk artists. I mean, the first one had, you know, the incredible guitar player Doc Watson on it.
Right.
And Emmylou Harris and John Hartford was on that first one, and it was just the collaborations, I think, created sounds that nobody had ever thought about or considered at that point in the world of country / folk rock music.
Yeah, and it was an interesting time because, of course, their incursion into country really came in the 70s. And had it been the 60s, Nashville wouldn't have let them see the light of day. So it was just a very, very good time for them. But yeah, a few boys from Long Beach did very well. And I guess they're still around. Jeff Hanna and his son are still touring.
Yes.
So yeah, but
they show up on PBS once in a while.
I'm not surprised. I always liked Buy For Me the Rain, and I was glad Liberty took a shot at it, but it certainly didn't hit.
No, it's a good sound. It sort of combines that folk rock thing with almost the West Coast country sound. It reminded me a bit of the Byrds, a little bit, in the harmonies and the structure of the song, which reminds me, I wanted to clue you in on a song. You may or may not know. There's a song on the soundtrack of the movie Candy that came out in 1968.
Okay.
Not a very successful movie at all.
Yeah.
It had the Byrds on the soundtrack. It was sort of a compendium soundtrack, and Dave Grusin did some of the instrumental pieces, and he did a piece called "Ascension to Virginity."
Oh Jesus. No, I know that. I know that Magic Carpet Ride was in that, but I missed Ascension to Virginity. Oh God!
But there are no vocals. There's la-las.
Right, Dave Grusin and the Byrds. Okay, I've never. I just know that. Like I say, Steppenwolf. I think Rock Me was in it too, and that's about all I know. I don't know what the movie was about, but I remember the picture of the girl with her finger in her mouth, and I thought, I don't think so.
No, it's supposed one of those. Late 60s movies that if it could have been, it would have been a porno. But I guess Warner wasn't having it.
Yeah, that was the feeling I got from the picture. And I thought, I don't think so.
She kept trying to find herself, and she kept finding herself in the bedroom with Ringo Starr and with George C. Scott. And it had a big cast, a real big cast.
Basically, it's a satire, I guess.
But
the cast was bizarre, as you probably know. I have no idea. Candy, I've seen her name. I have no idea who that is or what happened to her. But Marlon Brando and Richard Burton and Walter Matthau and John Huston and Ringo Starr, like Charles Aznavour, John Astin, like what?
it was a huge cast. I think drugs might have had something to do with it, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I never really chose to see it, but what can I say? But yeah, it had a huge cast. So it didn't do well?
No, not at all. Ringo played a Latino gardener. I'll just let it go with that. A very, very bizarre, film. And of course, I was in high school at the time, so I thought, I think it was an X. You know, a
single really?
X.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
It might have been a hard R. And that was back in the days when, they had the movie rating system had single X, double X, and triple X.
Exactly.
And triple X meant anything goes. I mean, here come the giraffe. I mean, it's just it's just very bizarre.
Right. That's when CATV was morphing into cable, that was one of the first channels, as you know, Sextasy with the triple X's. So I remember that well. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So,
oh yeah. It was something. One thing, and I won't talk about it here. Or maybe we'll talk about it here sometime. You know, I actually did the soundtrack. For adult film is a good phrase to use.
Okay.
I was at the University of Pennsylvania. They have a pretty good film school.
Uh huh.
And I was good friends with a guy who made a film, and it was an adult film, and he asked me to score it for him.
Good.
And it made money.
Good.
It made money.
You know, some of them did, and that was the weird thing. Like, if you remember, mm-hmm. Deep Throat was seen in legitimate theaters. Yes. You know, as far as that goes, it was very odd. I mean, on the one hand, you had the Mitchell brothers in San Francisco, and on the other hand, and on the other hand, you you had people who were actually making it into, you know, the neighborhood theater. So yeah, it was a very odd time, to be sure.
Well, here's the I guess it works. The movie industry back then, I think, worked a lot like the record industry. It's like, even if you had the B-side of a record, if the record sold 2 million copies, you made out just fine.
Yes.
Well, in movies, if you were part of a double bill, and the feature movie did well, you did well too. So
exactly.
This movie, I won't mention the title, this movie was double billed with a film called Micheline and the Device. I'll leave it there.
I love
and
that.
And it was huge. It was huge. Micheline, it just blew the doors off. I mean, I got checks. It was like, wow, this is cool.
Who played the device?
one very lucky small guy. I
remember that that film only because it the cast were, for the most part, people no one had ever heard of. Ever.
French. Freya French.
Yeah.
It was just so weird because he called me. He said, "I'm on a double bill with Eddie." I said, "Oh, that's great." I thought I was ever going to see a dime. I mean, it was just sort of fun to do it.
Oh, sure.
You know, I'm sitting in there with a moviola thinking, "Oh, what would this sound like?" Oh, okay.
Oh, sure. Know? That's great. You know, I do remember that movie, so I thought, well, I'll look it up while we're talking. And of course, you know, good old AI, it immediately switched it to Michelin. I'm reading about tires.
I think there was a tire in this. Yeah. That's a long story.
Classic bias ply tires. Well, I don't think a Michelin or the device had anything to do with tires.
Probably not. It was just very, very bizarre. And but anyway, I just wanted to share that. If you ever get a chance to listen to Ascension to Virginity, honest to God, I find it infectious.
That's a very bad way to say it. Oh God, infectious. Infectious is the last thing you want to say when you're talking about a song like that. All right, well,
that's true. Good. Okay. Well, anyway, just wanted to wanted to share that. I'm going to go get a blood test.
Exactly. Great to hear from you.
Thank you.
Keep me posted on that hip.
I promise.
Okay. Good. Thanks. All right, always great to hear from Steve Bryant. Yeah, true talent. I didn't realize that he was a movie guy as well, scoring, yeah. All right, do you have to see the movies first? I don't know. All right, so we'll get to all of you, actually. We will get to Eric in Apple Valley and Cindy in Chicago and Robert in Stickney. I'm going to get to Robert Stickney next because I left him holding at the end of the show. And Laura in Willowbrook, I think I left her holding too. And James on the South Side. 888-876-5593, because there's one line available, and it might go to you on WGN Radio.
Hey, little girl in the high school sweater. Gee, but I'd like to know you better. Just a swinging your books and chewing gum. Looking just like a Tuesday pump. Hey, little girl in the black silk stocking. Gee, but you got my heart rocking. Wearing that crazy skin tight skirt and that crazy Ivy League shirt. Hey, little girl. Hey, little girl, can I come along? Carry your books and I'll hold your arm.
I'm Raleigh James. That's my all-time favorite record in terms of backbeats. Yeah, that double backbeat just... does it for me. 1959 on Abner. And it was probably Al Duncan who played drums on that, but it could have been Paul Guzman, and I never really did find out. But since I'm talking to Chicago at the moment, if you know, tell me. Yeah, because I've never gotten clear copy on which one it was. So, Robert and Stickney, welcome to WGN Radio.
Thanks, Raleigh. Yeah, you know, yesterday when I was holding, you were talking with someone during the last hour, and I know they mentioned some of the Chicago people like Herb Trent, the Cool Gents,
yeah.
And I know there's a, I remember a story through the years, through the decades now, that that Herb Trent had a lot to do with promoting Dee Clark.
Well, before that, actually, yes. And the Cool Gents named themselves after that. Now, they wanted Herb to manage him, and Herb declined.
Uh-huh.
He was not interested in doing that. But but the group renamed themselves the Cool Gents after him. So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they weren't originally the Cool Gents. But so and Dee Clark, of course, was in that group.
I see. Okay.
I'm trying to think of what they were before that, because they were really, really coming on to, because they went to Marshall in Chicago, and they formed in 1951, and one of the only reason I really knew them originally was Cicero Blake was lead singer for them originally.
Okay,
absolutely loved. But Dee Clark came, I guess about 53. And they were the Delegates, and and they changed their name. And like I say, they really wanted Herb to manage them, and Herb was not having any of that.
Oh yeah, he didn't want to get into that end of it, I guess.
Well, yeah, he had so much else going on, you know. So
Wow.
So that was the
Because he was, of course, I used to listen to him for years,
of course.
Over at the high end of the dial.
Right, exactly. Yeah, well, he worked, long before VON, he worked everywhere.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was terrific. Because, of course, he was somewhat long of tooth compared to a lot of the guys. He was born in the 20s.
Yeah. And oh,
so,
wow. Yeah.
So originally, when he was in high school, he was doing a classical music show on BEZ. And so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting thing. But he was terrific because he had that ability to make that one-on-one connection. And people really thought he was their friend, even if they'd never met him. So, he went from, did a number of things. He, back before television, he was an actor in some of those NBC dramas on MAQ and things like that. And I think probably the first time he was an actual disc jockey with something other than classical was in Gary. And he worked several places there. And then, what I loved about him was even in the 50s, he coined the phrase dusties, but he liked playing oldies.
Right.
And he was at WBEE in Harvey, and the king of the dusties.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when the Chess Brothers bought HFC, it became VON, and he certainly was. He had been on HFC, by the way, before VON. He was, I think they only kept one or two guys, but definitely they kept Herb Kent when they went.
Yeah, I remember they used to say, this is WHFC Cicero with studios in Chicago.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Yeah, that was really. Go ahead.
The radio station obviously was sold and all that, but in the mid-70s, he got fired because they said he had a lack of energy, which, come on, it's Herb Kent. You got to be kidding me. You could come up with something better than that. But it turned out to be fine for him because he wound up doing a lot of things on FM as well. And, in the 90s, he had Steppin' at Club 7 on WLS-TV. It was a little dance show. And so
that, Yeah, I know we lost him a few years ago.
Oh,
it was,
yes,
I think,
2016. Yeah. He was 88.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
well.
You know, but he died the way we were all want to. He had done his radio show in the morning and died in the afternoon. After the death, it was a mess because the will was contested. And his daughter, who we talked about on the air every night, Robin, contested because his girlfriend was the executor. But Robin said that by the time that will was written, that Herb had dementia and the girlfriend took advantage of him. And so she and the grandchildren, grandchild, it was her son, got nothing from the will. Nothing. But, you know, he put out a book. I don't know if you read it, The Cool Gent, The Nine Lives of Radio Legend Herb Kent.
No, I haven't had a chance
to
read it.
You should. When he was going around with that, I was on XM at the time. I had him on the air, and we talked about it and had a lot of fun. But, yeah, obviously it's ghostwritten. David Small.
Yeah, it was really ironic because tonight I was going to ask you if you could play Hey Little Girl. Either that or Raindrops. Boy, some of the notes he used to hit that D chord.
Oh yeah, no, D chord was great, but that backbeat in "Hey Little Girl" just takes me where I want to go. So yeah.
Oh yeah. That beat was really something. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you can, the Cool Gent book is probably not more than a dollar or so on Amazon or whatever. It's a fun read.
Oh yeah. I have to keep that in mind. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Raleigh.
Good to talk to you.
Okay, same here.
Thanks. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye now.
So 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. Well, I thought it was time. Maybe it's not time. All right, I'll just... we'll find out eventually when it is. And in the meantime, let's see. I believe that Eric is in Apple Valley. So, Eric, welcome back to WGN Radio. Nope.
It's super kicky blast to be able to get in touch with you again. But I'm actually basking in the glow of that last second victory on Monday night when I got just under the wire and I held on when I thought I was going to get disconnected because you were right close to the end. And I told myself, go ahead and hang on. What have you got to lose? You know, if they don't get to you, they don't get to you. And then you got to me through some kind of synchronicity that we have going on, and I ended up having the right answer. So I actually celebrated with one of my favorite desserts, which is a angel food flip.
Ah.
Are you familiar with those?
Tell me about it.
It's an angel food cake kind of rolled over. And with some whipped vanilla cream or type of any kind of cream you could put in it, but I like the really whipped up kind of whipped cream vanilla flavoring. And it's simple, but it's highly effective dessert.
Ooh, all right.
and so, you know, that was only my second call to the show, so to be a winner that fast, I was like, oh, this is tremendous. It was just a joy to get under the wire like that, and because when you gave some of the clues, it sort of convinced me that I thought I might have the answer because I was thinking that all along, but I wasn't totally sure. But then when you gave a couple of clues, I was like, I think this might be it. But it was just like tantalizing, trying to hang on because I didn't even think I'd have the chance to say it. Because it was just about ready to close out the show. But anyway.
I think you asked me what home economics were called today in colleges. And
Yeah.
Okay. It is FCS, Family and Consumer Sciences.
Yeah, you said it was going to be something regarded to science.
Yeah, Family and Consumer Sciences, FCS.
Yeah, well, that makes sense because I was thinking something like engineering, like it would be called.
Right, I can see that.
Engineering, or you know, something to that. You know, but that makes sense. I couldn't think of it at the time, but that makes total sense.
Yeah.
So the other thing I wanted the other night, I think it was that same night, you were talking about a teenager, you know, that got killed or killed his passenger. He was like drunk.
Oh, that story. Yeah. Well, again, the kid supposedly graduated college in, high school in New York, and here he was in Western Minnesota. And it's like they never explained how he got there the same night he graduated from a high school in New York.
Well, I've got the answer for you.
Yay! All right.
So, yeah. So being in Minnesota, when I heard you saying it was New York Mills, it's an actual town in Minnesota, like in north central Minnesota.
I love this. All right.
It has a big Finnish population, and me being Scandinavian, I kind of know where the other Scandinavian people are around the country. So, so New York Mills, it's kind of, I would guess it's about maybe 3-hour drive north of the Twin Cities. And there's not very much close. I guess the biggest city closest to it would be Alexandria.
Oh, God.
It's a little bit north of Alexandria, if you're trying to picture it in your mind geographically. But it's the actual town, New York Mills. So this teenager, I guess, he was over in, like, I guess a little bit west of that town. And they said, you know, he was kind of showing off, or the story said that he was drunk and, you know, they were kind of celebrating or whatnot. But, you know, that's a part of the state where, like, that kind of stuff kind of goes on, because it's pretty rural and sometimes gets boring or whatever, to be honest.
The only thing I know close to it is Detroit Lakes.
Yeah, that is. I think Detroit Lakes is a little north and west.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's fairly close. How do you know Detroit Lakes?
Just driving off of 94, there's an exit for it, but it's not as close as they make it seem.
Yeah, that's for sure. You probably saw the big Paul Bunyan statue.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. So anyways, that's the gist of that. Like, I meant, if I'd have had more time the other night, I was going to mention it to you. But, I mean, like I said, it was under the wire. It was just about to close down the shop and everything. So, but I did want to mention that to you, because I thought, you know, I said, man, Raleigh's probably got a lot of mystery in her mind. Like, how's a kid from New York State get all the way over to Minnesota?
Yeah, exactly. And I never heard of the place. But I thought Paul Bunyan was in Bemidji.
Yeah, Bemidji. Yeah, that's right. But I thought if you were driving north.
Oh yeah, no, I saw all that stuff. Yes, absolutely. Oh yeah, I've seen them all. You know, the Corn Palace. You haven't lived till you've been there, and on and on. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, that is a strange name for a town in Minnesota, though. New York Mills.
It is.
And that's what throws it off. But I just happen to like. Something else happened there years ago that kind of like made me think, oh, that's actually, and I was thinking, yeah, I think that's a town in the state. And I thought I'd heard something there before. So I just wanted to like bring that up to speed with you. And the other item I wanted to touch on, did you ever have a chance to meet Don Cornelius?
Yes, I've met him. Well, he's no longer alive, of course, but I didn't know him, you know, but I've met him.
Okay, and was it like an interview kind of situation?
No. It was something in L.A. that he was there and I was there, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but, do you remember his little his signature little line, saying that he used to say on the show?
Oh, you mean on Soul Train?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
He was, and you know, it's interesting, I never really saw Soul Train, but he used to be a jock before that, a radio jock, so... you know, I knew him more from that stuff.
Yeah, well, he had this signature line. He'd always say, "Dealing some good feeling."
Okay, all right. I remember there was one. You know, you can bet your last money, it's all going to be a stone gas, honey.
He was. You know, he had one of the best lines I ever heard, and you'll appreciate this. There was a artist in the, I think it was early 70s, named Gino Vannelli.
Of course.
And yeah,
I just want to stop. What a great song that was.
Yeah, but what was his other one? There was the other one was kind of a more of a funk.
People got to move.
Yeah. So Don Cornelius he approached Gino Vannelli about coming on Soul Train, and Gino Vannelli said, "Well, I'm honored and everything, but I'm surprised, you know, I'm a white artist and your kind of, you know, show's for a black audience and everything, and you sure you really want me? And he goes, I'm not black. And Don Cornelius said, well, you're black enough.
That's great. Yeah, right. He was not only not black, he was Canadian. absolutely. But, you know, it was sad, as you probably know, Don Cornelius killed himself. And what was really, really sad is there were all these allegations before he died. He was arrested on domestic violence, and his ex-wife had a restraining order, and a couple of them, I think, and all that. And just very, very sad that he shot himself. Yeah, died at 75.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of innovative, wasn't he, for his time?
Absolutely. No doubt that he had a lot of impact. And, of course, obviously, Soul Train speaks for itself. But even before that, he was on WCIU. It was a little group, Myers Broadcasting. I worked there, not at CIU. But anyway, he was doing a Black's View of the News, things like that. So the Soul Train name came from, he used to tour local high schools. And that was the Soul Train. And CIU put on a dance party and all that. And so from what I understand, he financed the pilot for Soul Train, because at the time nobody was willing to take a shot at that. So it was his money. And it debuted, of course, locally in Chicago in 1970.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought the show started there and then moved it to L.A.
That's exactly right. A year later, he moved it to L.A., but it started in 1970. You know, sadly, in the 50s and the 60s, there were several great R&B dance shows, but no one has tapes because, of course, you know, 2-inch tapes were really expensive at the time, and Kinney's didn't last. But there were a number of them, and I'll tell you what, those kids on Bandstand used to watch Mitch Thomas on Channel 12, and which is a black dance show in Wilmington and Delaware, right by Philadelphia. That's where they got the moves. I mean, Mitch Thomas could put everybody else to shame. So,
yeah,
sad they're not still around, but there's no tapes of any of that.
That was my motivation to watch it when it would come on. You know, at school we would talk about what we saw. Like, the one I liked the best was the gauntlet. I called it the gauntlet dance, where that people would line up on two sides.
Yes.
And the dancers would come strolling through there doing their little moves and stuff.
Right.
Some of them would even be smoking a cigarette, which was
But the different moves and the outfits and all that. There was a guy in Detroit who did a little local TV dance show, R.J. Watkins, and there are some clips of that. And in fact, it was one of the Mayor Hawthorne records has clips that he synced like he was on the show, which of course he wasn't. But you get to see all the dancers, and it's just classic. So if you ever can find it, it's R.J. Watkins and Mayor Hawthorne.
Oh, look, that's on YouTube?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And I think it was the background for Gonna Take a Long Time, which was a song about Detroit. But also, if you do find that clip, watch it to the end, because there is a commercial that you've got to see, and that's all I'm gonna say.
I love the old time commercial.
Oh yeah, you'll love this.
I can get lost for quite a long time watching old time commercials and stuff. So,
Well, when you see this, you won't believe this was ever on the air, but it was a little UHF station. And Mayor Hawthorne did a great job syncing to, but I think it's, I'm going to look it up while we're talking, but I think it's under A Long Time. Let's see, A Long Time. Yeah, okay.
You're watching
TV 68. You sure? Highland Park, Detroit. Just look for Mayor Hawthorne, A Long Time.
Okay.
And I want you to know what you think about it, and then especially the commercial at the end.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll do that. I'll do that. And so last thing I want to touch on was, I did a job called Frontline Promotions for the band Chicago some years ago.
Wow.
And I grew up listening to their music and stuff. But I'm not from the Chicago area, but, I mean, I really liked them. And growing up in California, I listened to them like all, you know, that was like what I really latched on to when I first started listening to music. And I was just curious because do you know what they were called before they were called Chicago?
Well, Chicago Transit Authority, of course.
Okay, and how about before that? There was a name before that.
Was there? Okay, I don't know.
I was curious if anyone would know, but if they were called the Big Thing.
Okay.
when they first started out, they were known as the big thing.
Okay.
And then it was CPA, and then because of the lawsuit, potentially,
right.
They shortened it to Chicago.
Right.
But so I was wondering if you ever met or interviewed like Robert Lamb or Peter Cetera or Jimmy Pinko.
No, I haven't. But I would like to interview Robert Lamb because he was a huge fan of bossa nova. So I think I'd rather talk to him about that than the music. Although my favorite Chicago song has a bossa nova feel to it, Another Rainy Day in New York City.
Oh, from the 10th album.
Yeah.
So, you know, did you hear Robert Lamb's solo stuff? Because he did a bossa nova album.
Okay,
solo.
I've run out of time. Talk to you later. Okay.
Okay.
This show has just ended, so apologies to James and Carl. We're doing it tomorrow, 21 hours from now. Please be here. Attendance will be taken. We thank Adam. We thank John. I thank you. And I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.